My name is Dr. Austin Tay. Welcome to In Conversation. This segment is brought to you by the Division of Industrial Organizational Psychology. We are very delighted today to have with us Dr. Alan Bourne, CEO and founder of Sova Assessment in the UK, to chat with us. How are you, Alan?
I'm good, thank you.
Good. Thank you for taking the time to talk to us. I was just wondering, maybe you could do a brief introduction of what you do and your career.
Yeah, sure, Austin. Yeah, so I'm an occupational psychologist by background. I founded Sova a little over 4 years ago. And, you know, prior to that, going back quite a long way, I started my career off at SHL working on developing psychometric tools. I was then a co-founder at TalentQ, at which we then sold to Hay Group after about 9 years or so, which, as you know, was subsequently bought by Korn Ferry. And yeah, so after that, in recent years in Sova, we've been very focused on how to combine the science of assessment with digitizing the technology side. And so that's what we're focused on at the moment.
Great. I mean, we know each other during your TalentQ days. So we know you're the right person to talk to us about assessment. So the question I will, you know, probably want to ask you is, do you think people have a very good grasp of what talent assessment is in the industry?
Well, I think there are different, I think people probably have a myriad of different definitions of what that means for them. I guess fundamentally in a lot of organizations, identifying talent externally and internally can be quite an expedient process for obvious reasons. But I think, you know, many organizations are starting to very much get their head around the importance of objective assessment and using that to identify the right talent and to look at that much more strategically. So I think that has evolved, you know, hugely probably in the last 10 years or so, you know, and people are looking across the piece all the way through from, you know, entry-level hiring, in picking the right people through to potential and succession planning, et cetera.
Okay, well, you see there's a lot of different definition in talent assessment itself. I'm just going to make you define your version of talent assessment. What is Alan Bourne's talent assessment?
So from my perspective, I would say talent assessment is all about objectively understanding your talent, and I mean that from a psychological point of view, and looking at the key characteristics that drive success and making sure that you've measured them and are they then able to support people to develop them.
Yeah. That sounds quite right. I mean, in a way to assess people, we must have the right to do so. So in a way, you know, assessment has been around for years. You and I, we are in the space, yeah, and we know there are always new assessment tools in the market, and every other person will be thinking of how to assess their employees or their talent. But what is the future trends of talent assessment? You know, with technology, it is evolving and we are looking at 4.0 now. In your mind, what is the future of talent assessment?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think the first point to pick out there is the context has evolved. So the world, I mean, particularly in the last few weeks or so, obviously that's been hugely disruptive. But prior to that as well, the world of work is becoming increasingly agile and fast moving. So that context really sets the agenda for what the trends are. I think if you look at the trends in talent assessment that we're seeing in you know, supporting organizations on, a very key one, which, you know, we're doing this now, is basically being able to do everything virtually. Yeah, you know, there's global organizations with people all over the place, and particularly in the current pandemic environment, that's absolutely critical. So the virtualization of end to end is key. You know, there's still people still want to have face to face interaction, but we kind of need to be able to do all of this virtually. So that's key. The importance of diversity and inclusion, and that means different things to some degree in different locations. Again, that is really kind of ramped up in its importance, I think, across the globe, you know, and so that's really vital, that how talent is assessed and how we look at potential needs to properly factor that in, you know, and fundamentally ensure fairness and inclusion, right? And when you then take that from a technology point of view, I think there's a kind of digital 1.0 version of how this has happened, where there are lots of different products, or, you know, software guys would call them point solutions. You know, there's a test that looks at one thing, or there's a video interview that looks at another, and there's lots of different bits of kit, but they don't really talk to each other and they're quite micro. And I think there's a really significant evolution. And we've seen this in other industries, like, you know, for CRM for customers and the like, right? You know, or, you know, companies like Alibaba or Google or whatever, in the data that they're using, that having an end-to-end capture of all of the assessment information and being able to analyze that and to benchmark it and to slice and dice it really intelligently, I think is a really big move forward. You know, in, I think we're moving from that individual products era to much more of a platform and systems era about how we can do this kind of work, and that it's fully integrated into HR systems. So I think that that shift is going to open up great possibilities for us in terms of understanding data and trends for teams, you know, individuals and teams much more effectively.
What do you think in terms of this, all these new trends that you've just shared with us, how is that going to impact on how HR in organization be performing their work? You know, now they have new technology to deal with, to assess their talent. What are the things that they perhaps have to be cautious about, be worried about, to be trained in? Do they need to be?
In the Asia market in particular?
No, well, maybe generally in Asia.
Well, I think, I think, if we're just looking at Asia specifically for a moment, I mean, I think there's less legacy in Asia-based organizations, which actually is an advantage, actually, frankly. Yeah, so, you know, you've got sort of less legacy culture or expectation or old systems that probably need to be updated. In many organizations, that creates a little bit more opportunity to be more innovative, frankly, which I think that's a great advantage you know, within the market regionally. But when you look at it, you know, across the piece, there's fundamentally two strands, right? So it's very easy to be tech only led, and I think that's probably a mistake, right? Clearly, we need to be advancing the technology around assessment significantly, and to my, you know, point I was making, it needs to be much more joined up. Yeah. And so that integrated platform capturing assessment data, being able to look at it through a process, whether that's, you know, assessing internal talent and identifying high potential people, or whether that's how we look at the capability and potential of new hires, all of that needs to be much more expansive. So I think that's kind of key. But additionally, the way that we apply the science of that, so we're as accurate as possible and as fair as possible, which is fundamentally the IO psychology aspect, that isn't going anywhere. In fact, we need to be better probably at sharing that knowledge and educating everybody on how to understand it. It should be the case that the technology means there's less, let's say, legwork for people to do in that area, but it's the understanding and interpretation that's really critical. And I think there's a sort of demand for that scientific basis and evidence base to be meshed really cleanly with the way that any new technological solutions work, because one without the other isn't all that useful. You know, science without a good way of delivering it is quite, you know, limited in its scope, and vice versa. Tech-led solutions without the right scientific sort of angle, again, have lots of risks.
And with all this discussion about artificial intelligence and technology, and you're talking about virtual assessment centers. So, I know AI is still relatively new. We are still talking about it as if it is already here. But I think in a certain aspect of the work that we do, especially in assessment, I think we are still in a very embryonic stage. Do you see that AI is going to be, you know, advancing in the next few years in terms of talent assessment, or do you think we are still in a long run before we actually mature in this area?
Well, I think we are making advances very quickly in the space, but I think it will take a little while for it to mature into really delivering the impact. I mean, if you take an example, there was a well-publicized case where with Amazon about a year or two ago, where they had created effectively a CV screening tool, right? And the challenge that they had, and they kind of, you know, they'd obviously experimented with this, and then I guess publicly said, well, we've tried this and it didn't really work for us, is they tried to build a tool, and perhaps the criterion data wasn't deep enough into organizations about who the really good people were. It was perhaps more focused on who got hired or which candidates people picked. The algorithm kept sort of relearning to discriminate against women, because on average, men were more likely to get picked in the existing human process. So what it showed us is, if you sort of just throw an AI tool at an existing set of data, which has human biases embedded in that data set or that process that's happening, what you can end up doing is simply replicating and speeding up existing human failure, how the AI works. So that's clearly really unhelpful, right? So the actual power of the technology is fantastic, but you have to frame that within, well, what outcomes are you looking for? And where we've been going with that, and I think where the market will no doubt sort of evolve to, is consider the different outcomes that really matter. You know, so, and I think we spoke to one or two of them. So, you know, who are going to be high performers, who are high potential people that within a particular organization will progress and, you know, have greatest impact, right? You know, alongside, are we doing this objectively, inclusively, and fairly? Yeah. And you can't kind of just look at one of those outcomes. You need to look at the round of those outcomes to have a really good solution. So I think it's about what questions we get machine learning tools to focus on. That's very much in our gift to get that right, you know, or wrong. Yeah.
Yes.
So that's the key piece. I think the potential is enormous. The more that we have data in a way that's accessible, and that was my earlier point, you know, you need to have data accessible, but then we have to be asking the right questions, and that's what's going to make the difference, I think.
Yeah. And I think especially you also mentioned early on with the pandemic at the moment, this has become much more of a necessary tool for a lot of organization to be able to do this without face-to-face. I mean, one of the questions that I want to ask is, apart from the business that you have in the UK, I know you have an office in Melbourne, in yes. Asia-Pac.
Yeah.
How are all these trends that you're talking about, in your mind, is going to relate to Asia? Because Asia is a very different market from the UK.
Yes, absolutely. Well, I think, as I was alluding to earlier, you know, there's a lot of opportunity in Asia to, you know, and this is probably a fairly kind of well-trodden path and comment, but there is quite a lot of opportunity to leapfrog where perhaps some of the Western European and US organizations are, because in some of those markets where assessment has been around perhaps for the longest, in its current form, a lot of tools and systems have been put in, you know, maybe 5, 10, even 20 years ago. And so there are processes that are quite embedded, but they haven't necessarily, once they're in, they kind of need quite a lot of evolution. So changing a sort of brownfield site is harder than addressing greenfield opportunities, right? So I think that's quite key. I think also another point for Asia is, you know, notwithstanding the current situation, it is broadly speaking much more of a high growth kind of situation, where finding the right talent and growing quickly really has that flavor to it. You know, in many other markets, there's a different feel to that, where perhaps unemployment's higher and those kind of things, right? So the shape of it economically and the context around it is different, and probably, you know, the pretty exciting as a result. Yeah. So I think that means in organizations in Asia, which many of which are obviously using current, you know, 1.0 solutions, there's nevertheless quite a big opportunity to look at things more widely and go, right, we can learn from what's happened in other markets, and we can make some really good plays now on what's going to set us up for the next sort of 5 or 10 years in terms of how we build, you know, have the right platforms, build the right data, etc.
I mean, based on what you just said, Asia is definitely a place where a lot of opportunities, but Asia is also known for being very behind in terms of embracing talent assessment methodology and practices. Do you think we are ready for it in Asia, or where would the whole talent assessment scene here go from here?
Yeah, I think there's probably one or two economic factors that play into that as well. So as the when there are lots of people available to do jobs, and that the skill level of some of the roles is relatively straightforward, the sort of intuitive, I mean, the need for assessment is there anyway, but the intuitive of, you know, need for it is less clear, perhaps, to organisations that haven't done much of it before. When the talent market starts to get a bit tighter, or the economy is evolving much more into a knowledge economy, which is absolutely the case in lots of countries in Asia, then it starts to become more apparent, because you really see the difference between what a good candidate does or what a good high potential leader does within an organization, and those differences become a lot more obvious, I think. And so that experience for managers and business leaders, I think, sets a better context to up the game for assessment, you know, and to build the rationale. Now, obviously, a lot of multinationals kind of have, you know, relatively standardized processes globally, but I think you'll probably find a lot more adoption. And also, as it becomes easier, where the candidate experience is better, where the hiring manager experience is better, I think it may be on the strand of, yeah, we need to really have really great data about our people. I think that is going to move things forward, where perhaps more psychometrics didn't really do that.
Okay, great. One question, one last question I want to ask, as being part of a division of industrial organization psychologists, with all those things that you're talking about, the different trends and virtual assessment, AI, understanding the future trends here, what do you think we should be looking for in terms of future coming oxides? What should they be learning, maybe in a university, or expose themselves to when they come into this industry itself?
Yes, sure. I mean, I think there's, if I perhaps go back quite a long way, if I go at literally 20 years, I worked for a period of time for the post office in the Royal Mail in the UK in a unit that was multidisciplinary, right? So we had, and we were playing around with AI tools even back then, right? So there was a team of occupational psychologists, but we had operational researchers and market researchers and other people sort of, you know, next to us, basically. And I think what I learned from that is it's the interfaces between some of these skill and knowledge areas where the biggest opportunity for us to expand our capability and add value is. I think in the current environment, you might add data science and tech absolutely to that point. Yeah. So I think when we look at what we can do as occupational psychologists, you know, us expanding the range of our knowledge, where we don't need to be experts in those other areas, but I think we need to know a bit more about them and to be good at collaborating with people in those other kind of areas. Yeah. In order to really expand our impact. So I think that's key from a skill and capability development point of view. I think if you then look at the, well, what are we here for kind of question, there's probably sort of two extremes that happen. I think this happens in other professional areas as well. There's lots of activities that OPs might have historically got involved in, like, let's say, running assessment centres is quite a good example, where, you know, we probably would have a set of skills which mean we can help do a really good job of that, but its overall value level is sort of limited, and actually we're better off training people to hiring managers to do a really good job of that, or HR functions to do a really good job of that, and our role is more to facilitate, train, support rather than to do those things. There's then high value activities like leadership assessment, where, you know, the OP doing that can be particularly important. So there are, you know, more in one-to-one things, or, you know, one-to-small group things, where we have a key role. But then I think the expanding area is where we're becoming more the architects of the solution and working with clients to build out and configure and customize solutions for different organizations, really help them get the system of how they do this right. I think that's the big area for OPs to move into, from more sort of practice of delivering consultancy to the practice of help, you know, enabling organizations to then do it themselves, right? You know, in using technology to do it. I think that's probably the strongest area that we're going to need to evolve our skill sets and our capabilities.
Would you be seeing, in terms of all those skill sets you just said, that will perhaps also impact on the educational system in the university when they're teaching OP? Because I think what we are seeing, a lot of the syllabus are still quite box standard. Are they actually accommodating the practical side of, you know, as an OP comes out to work in the real world? Are universities ready to accommodate the kind of skills for them?
Well, I expect the answer is probably not yet, to be honest. But I think one would hope that quite a lot of the courses are sort of recognising some of these issues as well. I'm sure that, you know, I think some of them are. But I think there is a need to reformat that and to kind of go, look, there are clearly bits of core knowledge that matter here. I think there's probably two elements to that. I think one of them is that certainly in the UK, components of that sort of OP, you know, the eight areas as it's been known in the UK system, they're a little bit all running in parallel. So it's probably a bit unfair to say they're in silos, but there isn't enough discussion about if you're working with a client, how the different areas interact. You know, is it about getting the right people? Is it about developing the people? Or is it about changing the work design and situation? You know, the interaction between those things, I think we probably need more of that to happen. The earlier education about systemically how it all fits together. So I think that's really key. And I think, yeah, the particularly the sophistication of probably statistics and data science, etc., needs to evolve quite a lot from what certainly, you know, I think it has been. And probably also the sophistication of practical sort of, you know, skills that relate to, you know, doing one-to-one assessments and coaching and that kind of stuff. I think there's practical skills there and then practical skills on the numerical and stats side that would benefit from more being embedded into the courses. You know, that might make them bigger, but I think it would probably produce a stronger sort of talent bench coming into the profession.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, all universities or higher education establishment should listen to you. They should start thinking about that, because to prepare very, very good OPs to work in the industry, we need to groom them from the education itself. If not, then they will be coming out and not able to do those work. Because I think, as you said, OP itself, the industry is evolving and changing. Many things that we learned in the past might not necessarily be applicable anymore. I mean, you and I, we're all as professionals, we also keep on understanding what are the latest research and keep ourselves abreast of what is the latest trend, which is very, very important. And I think that is a very good way to end this conversation with you that you have given to our listeners here in Asia, food for thought. So I would like to say thank you very much, Dr. Alan Bond, for talking to me, and I hope we get a chance to talk to you again. Thank you very much.
Cheers, thank you.